the way that he makes a covenant with us. And we were primarily looking at these two fundamental elements that he always calls his people to make a choice. It's a choice that's radical and binary. It's radical in the sense that he requires everything from us. He requires our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and he will accept nothing less. It's binary because there's not a spectrum of righteousness where you can get partial credit. You are either in compliance and obedient to God, or you are rebelling in some fashion. And it doesn't really matter what form your rebellion takes. It can have the veneer of religion, or it can be more openly rebellious. It is still disobedience, and it still brings the same result of a curse and death. So we saw that that's how God operated in Deuteronomy 30 and in many other places there with the old covenant. It's how he continues to operate today with the new covenant, that he gives us two paths to follow. It's still radical and binary. And so the main idea of that sermon was to show us that that is a fundamental way that God deals with us. It's not inherent in any one covenant. It is inherent in God's nature to call us to make such a choice. One of the things I mentioned in that lesson is that we were going to continue the discussion of covenants soon. Well, today is soon. We're going to talk about covenants some more. And so I wanted to make sure you are up to date on those fundamentals, because now we're going to look at exactly what a covenant is and the different types of covenants that there are. Understanding this subject is very important. It helps to erase so many of the misconceptions and misunderstandings of Scripture. It's going to deeply enhance how you read the Bible and how you know what God wants us to do. And so we're going to be doing much more than making the simple assertion that God wiped away the old covenant and fulfilled the old covenant and replaced it with the new covenant. We're going to go much more in detail than that. So let's start with a basic definition. What is a covenant? That's not a word that we use very often today. I like the ISBE's definition. It's an agreement of solemn and binding force. So it's more than a casual conversation. It's more than a casual agreement of fact, even. It's something that is solemn and important and often marked with some kind of ceremony or rite or something that legitimizes it. And then probably the most important word in this definition, it is binding. Once the agreement is reached, once the covenant is made, the parties are bound to what the covenant says. There's force behind it that you're taking away freedom and options that were there before. And now both parties are giving consideration to the other. In fact, when you look at the definition of the word covenant across different languages, English and Hebrew and Greek, you routinely see this word binding. So I want you to remember that when you think of the word covenant, it is something that binds two parties together. That being said, there are still different kinds of covenants. They are not all the same, and they have extremely different implications depending on what sort of covenant you're talking about. We're going to look at three different kinds today, and the first of those is a parity covenant. The word parity has to do with equality, so that should give you an idea that we're talking about a covenant between equals. You know, Galatians chapter 3 and verse 15 makes a distinction that we might gloss over if we're not careful. It says that there is such thing as a man-made covenant, or as another translation says, as a man's covenant. Well, if you have to make that sort of distinction, a man-made covenant, that must mean that's different than a covenant that is God-made. And that is, in fact, what we're going to see. This parity covenant is something very common between men, between humans. We make parity covenants with each other all the time. It is the most common sort of covenant that we are familiar with.
To see an example of one of these in the Bible, go to Genesis chapter 21. We'll read verses 22 through 27. Genesis chapter 21, verses 22 through 27. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, "God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me, or with my descendants, or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned." And Abraham said, "I will swear." When Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, "I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, and I have not heard of it until today." So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. And it goes on to describe some of the ceremony that they used to show that that covenant was ratified. But I want you to understand the key elements of this parity covenant here. You have two men coming together as equals. Abraham and Abimelech are both powerful and influential in their area. Remember, this is early enough in history that you don't have so many, you know, large civilizations. You have more nomadic people, and wealth is measured more in terms of the size of flocks and herds and the numbers of servants and the number of wells that you control and such. Abraham was quite wealthy. And so he was a powerful person for that area, and Abimelech was as well. And so you have these two powerful men who are kind of butting heads, and there's opportunity for a lot of conflict between them. And so Abimelech reaches out and says, essentially, "Abraham, let's be friends. Let's not be in conflict with each other. Let's cooperate and play nicely and make it where we do not have to waste time fighting with each other." Since they're meeting together as equals, Abraham has the right to consider that request and the right to back out if he doesn't want to. He can walk away. He can say, "This is not agreeable to me. I want to be in conflict with you. I want there to be, you know, problems because you are my enemy." But he doesn't say that. He finds this agreeable, except he attaches a condition to it. He says, if we're going to be allies, if we're going to be friends and treat each other well, then we have to resolve this problem that already exists between us. Your servants have seized a well that was mine. And friends and allies don't do that to each other. And Abimelech basically says, "Whoa, I didn't know anything about that. You didn't tell me about this before, and they didn't do this at my instruction, And I had no knowledge of this," but he implies here, but he's going to fix it. He's going to take care of this and return that well to Abraham because his servants had taken it when they should not have. So Abraham is essentially saying here, "Yes, I will be your friend and ally, and I will pledge to be in cooperation with you on the condition that you return this well to me." They both find that agreeable. They, what we would say today, they shake on it. They make the ceremony showing that this is a covenant, and now they are both bound to it. Okay, so I said this is the most common type of covenant that we are familiar with. And maybe some of you are scratching your heads and going, "I have never made a covenant like that before. I have never gone to some powerful person in my neighborhood and say, let us be friends and allies. Let us not be opposed to each other, and return my well to me, and my descendants will treat your descendants." We don't do that. That sounds very strange, but it's just because it's different problems, different things that we need and want from each other. Let me give you a hypothetical, but very plausible example about how you and I could enter into a parity covenant with each other. So let's say my car breaks down. I don't know anything about fixing cars, so I need to find somebody who can fix it for me. And you know how to fix cars. So I come to you and say, "Will you look at my car and tell me if you can fix it?" So you look at it and you determine what's wrong, and you say, "Okay, Danny, I see the problem, I see the part that's broken, and I know what needs to be done to replace it. I can fix that for you for $500. And because we're meeting as equals and we're trying to make this agreement with each other, I go, ooh, $500. I don't know, but I can spend that. Can you do it for $450? And you say, well, sorry, Danny, I really can't. The part is already so expensive, and I'm already not really making much of anything on labor here with you that I just can't do it for $450. So now we're at an impasse. Now we could potentially walk away and have to find somebody else to fix my car and somebody else to be your customer. But then you come up with another idea. You say, actually, I know something that could make this work. See, I know you know how to fix computers, and I have a problem with my laptop. If you will fix my laptop for me, then I can fix your car for you for that $450. And that's agreeable to me. And so we shake on it, or we sign paperwork saying that we'll do that, whatever version of ratifying it you want. We tend to rely on our spoken word when we're dealing with friends and when things are fairly low value. The more important something gets and the more removed somebody is from you, the more we start to want to have things written down on paper and maybe have lawyers involved and so on and so forth. But we come to that agreement. We agree that this is what we will do. I'll fix your computer, you'll fix my car, and I'll pay you $450. And now we're bound to it. That is a parity covenant, or as we might put it today, a contract. We tend to use that word instead. So we had the opportunity to negotiate. We had the opportunity to back out the whole way through. But now that we've ratified the covenant, now that we've come to an agreement, we are bound to it. Now you have to fix my car. Now I have to fix your computer, and I have to pay you $450. What happens if I fix your computer and you fix my car and I throw $100 at you and say, there, that ought to cover it? You're not going to be very happy. You're going to say, that's not what we agreed to. That's not what our covenant says. Now, it could have been what we agreed. If I had negotiated that and if you had agreed to that, that could have been perfectly fine. But if I, after the fact, try to change the terms, you're going to be very unhappy, and you're going to have cause to be upset with me, maybe take me to the small claims court, or maybe just be upset with me. However you want to resolve it, that can vary, but the reality is I've broken our covenant that we made. That's not right. Once the covenant is ratified, we can't do that. If the $450 was not acceptable to me, I should have backed out before and not made the covenant with you. That's what a parity covenant is. It's two people or two parties making an agreement with each other, negotiating until both are happy, and then being obligated to follow the terms. Not every covenant is a parity covenant, though. There's also such thing as a vassal covenant. This goes by a few different names, actually. I like to use vassal. It's a little simpler than some of them that are out there. But to show that this is a different kind of covenant, turn to Psalm 111 and verse 9. Psalm 111 and verse 9. He sent redemption to his people. He has commanded his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. So this is talking about God, obviously. And here we see him commanding his covenant forever. Now try to fit that into the framework of a parity covenant for a moment. That we're trying to come to an agreement and I command my covenant to you and now we're bound by it. That's not how that worked, right? We were negotiating. We were trying to come to an agreement that's mutually beneficial, that both are happy with. No one is commanding anything. Yeah, you might not be willing to accept what the other person has to offer, and so you might walk away, but you're still not commanding them with any sort of authority that they must accept the terms that you are offering. If I had told you that I won't pay a dime over $20 for the car repair, you're going to tell me to get lost. That the parts cost way too much for that, and so we walk away. But with God, it's not a parity covenant. And that should be intuitively obvious, because we don't meet God on equal footing. A parity covenant was between two equals, two people who have the same level of authority who are coming to an agreement together. Do you have the same level of authority as God? No. No one in here does. No one on earth does. No one anywhere does, because God has all authority. A vassal covenant is a covenant between a stronger party and a weaker party, and it has some very key differences. Whenever there is an imbalance of power, the stronger party has the authority to dictate the terms of the relationship. The stronger party does not have to make any promises of their own. They can just say, do this or else. But they can make a promise if they like. They can bind themselves to something if they want to. There's no room for negotiation because there's no leverage on the part of the weaker party to negotiate anything. The only thing that the weaker party can do is choose to be in compliance or not. Choose to be obedient or not. You can't choose to opt out. And what I mean by that is, with the parity covenant, we might be at an impasse and we can't come to an agreement, and so we walk away and there is no covenant between us. When God commands his covenant, the covenant is in force. You can't walk away and say, I refuse to be held accountable to this covenant. That has already been decided. The only thing that you can decide is, will I obey it and get whatever God has promised, or will I disobey and get whatever consequences there are for disobeying? That is why you cannot opt out of what God has said. I've met people, I know people, who have said that very thing. They say, I don't want heaven, I don't want hell, I don't want any part of religion. I just want to do my own thing. Well, if you met God on equal footing, you could say that. But you are not equal with God. God's covenants with man can't be parity covenants because they're not between two equals. Look at Exodus chapter 24. Exodus chapter 24. Moses has spent a significant amount of time telling the people of Israel what God has commanded them to do. Here in Exodus 24, beginning in verse 3, Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the rules. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. He rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the people of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. Then Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he threw against the altar. He took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do, and we will be obedient. And Moses took the blood and threw it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words. So Moses tells them what God has commanded them. Notice that there was no negotiation phase. Moses didn't say, decide which parts of this you're okay with, and decide which parts you want to push back on. You know, if you're going to make a really important contract with someone and you hire a lawyer to help you, they might tell you something like that. Say, you should push back on this part of the contract, or that part of the contract, or you need to add this clause here to protect yourself, or you don't get to do any of that with God. He offers you the terms, he commands the terms, and now you are held accountable to them. So when Israel here consents to obey God's commands, this is really important, they are not saying, we agree to be held accountable to these rules. They're already going to be held accountable to these rules. When they consent, they are saying, we intend to keep these rules. We want the reward that you are offering. We intend to obey your voice, and we pledge that as a people. That's very different. That seems subtle, but it is an important nuance that changes this radically. If the people had all with one voice said, we don't like this covenant, We don't want to worship God. We want to worship the gods of Egypt or the gods of some other nation or worship ourselves or worship Moses. Doesn't matter. If they had said, we completely reject this, they would still be held accountable to it and they would still face the punishment that God would give to them. So their consent is not changing the binding power. It's only whether they obtain reward or punishment. Another example, and one we won't read because I think we're pretty familiar with the account, is that of Noah. God told Noah, I intend to destroy the world with a flood. That's going to happen. I'm giving you the opportunity to escape that. If you want to escape that, if you want to be saved, then you need to build an ark in exactly this manner. Here are the dimensions. Here are the methods you're going to use to make this ark. And here are the animals that you're going to load up into the ark. And you and anyone that you can convince to get in there with you will be saved. Moses did not negotiate like Abraham negotiated with Abimelech. He did not say, you know what, God, I like the direction you're going, but that's a really big ark and it's going to take me so many years to build it. I'll do one half that size. He doesn't get to say that. That's not how it works. God has commanded his covenant. Therefore, you must obey. And if Noah had chosen not to, then he would have faced the same fate as the rest of the world. It works the same in the new covenant. This is not just an old covenant thing. God makes vassal covenants with us today. Look at Mark chapter 16. Verses 15 and 16. Mark chapter 16, verses 15 and 16. He said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. You kind of notice that binary nature there, right? God saying, if you believe and are baptized, then you will be saved. If you do not believe and therefore are not baptized, because why would you be baptized if you don't believe in God, then you will not be saved, you will be lost, you will be condemned. And I can just imagine someone raising their hand going, I don't want to be saved or lost. I don't care about any of this. Just, check the box to opt out. And when I die, I just want to fade into nothingness. I don't want heaven or hell. Too bad. That is not your choice to make. That's not on the table. God has said that this is the covenant. He has commanded that covenant with you and with the entire world. Your only choice now is whether you will comply or whether you will rebel. There's a third type of covenant. And it's one that doesn't immediately seem like a covenant. It's got a pretty big difference. It's called a unilateral covenant. And as you might imagine from the name, it is a very one-sided covenant. There are no conditions established. And so, really, rather than unilateral covenant, we would frequently call this a promise. Because that's what it boils down to. And God makes unilateral covenants with us sometimes as well. In fact, Noah is a very good example of this. We already looked at Noah for a vassal covenant, and that was true before the flood. What about after the flood? Go to Genesis chapter 9, verses 8 through 17. Genesis chapter 9, verses 8 through 17. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, behold, I establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. It is for every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you, but never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth, and that bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it. and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth. The word covenant is all over this section. But it's not a parity covenant and it's not a vassal covenant. It's not a parity covenant, again, because God's not coming to Noah as equals to negotiate with him. So that's off the table. But it's not a vassal covenant either because God is not commanding Noah to do anything. There are no conditions at all on Noah's side or on the rest of creation's side. Instead, what God is doing is he is binding himself to a chosen course of action with no conditions. He is saying, I will never again destroy the earth with a flood. Now, there's a number of things God could have done differently here had he wanted to. He could have not bound himself to that. He could have left his options open, saying that he reserves the right to destroy the earth with a flood if he so chooses. If that's the case, all he has to do is not make this promise to Noah. Or he could have established conditions. He could have made this a vassal covenant and said, I will never again destroy the earth with a flood so long as you never get this wicked again. That would be a vassal covenant. Instead, what he said is just, I will never do this again. Full stop. It's unconditional. Nothing that Noah does or his descendants do or that the rest of creation does can possibly change that. So even if the world gets every bit as wicked as it was in Noah's day or worse, God is still holding himself to the covenant that he made. He will never again destroy the earth with a flood. And he marks that covenant with the sign of the rainbow in the clouds. And God says, when I see this sign, I will remember the covenant that I made. When you see this sign, you will remember the covenant that I made. You can count on it. You know that this is what I will do. There are many other examples of this type of covenant. I feel like it's the easiest one to understand because it's simply a promise. But it is technically a kind of covenant because it is solemn and it is a binding agreement. It's just all one-sided. So let's pull this all together for a moment. I don't care if you remember these three words or not. Some people like the vocabulary and some people don't. I call these $100 words sometimes because they're not words that we routinely use. They're words that are often used to describe these, and they're good and accurate words for it. But I don't care if you remember those words. Like, this isn't school. There will be no pop quiz on, you know, matching those. We're not doing any of that. What I do want you to remember is the concepts behind these. And to understand that God establishes covenants in different ways and then establish covenants in different ways. And not to confuse one with the other. When you read through the Bible, you should be able to identify that sometimes there are people who are making a covenant with each other and they can negotiate. And when you think about your own life, you should think of a number of times when you have done that very thing. But you're not going to make the mistake of trying to make that type of covenant be how God deals with us. Because you know that we don't meet God on equal footing. And so there is no reason to confuse those two. There's no reason to expect to be able to negotiate with God. God is not your buddy. He is not your pal to come to terms with however you both see fit. God is the creator of the universe. He is king of all. He commands his covenant, and you must obey. But then you can also see the unilateral covenants, the things that God promises that will come true. You ever wonder, is God really going to do what he says? Well, when he makes these covenants, when he binds himself to it, he is now holding himself to that chosen course of action. So it would then become sin for God to change his mind when he does such a thing. So He's not going to do that. He will make good on his promises. God is faithful. God can be counted on. God will keep his promises. That's true when we talk about the rainbow and the clouds. He'll never again destroy the earth with a flood. But it's also true with things like God will judge the world. God will make all of us answer for the choices that we've made. God has promised this unconditionally that we will be held accountable. So I want to give you an opportunity to think about your relationship with the covenants that God has made with you. The most important one being the vassal covenant that you can be obedient to God, you can be his child, you can be baptized for the remission of your sins and be right with God, or you can rebel and go your own way and face everlasting fire in hell. That is the choice. There is no opt-out. There is no neutral option. There is no spectrum. Those are the choices that you are given. Where do you stand? Are you obedient to God or not? Even if you have been baptized, even if you are God's child, are you still in compliance? Are you still doing the things that God has commanded you to do? Because the life of a Christian does not stop at baptism. That's the beginning. God has many things that he wants you to do, many things that you are required to do. And if you want to be saved, if you want to be right with him, you will continue to do them. We can baptize you this morning if that is your wish, if you are ready to come to God, or even if you're already a Christian, if there's sin you need to repent of, if you need to make things right, if you have questions and want to know if you're right with God, we are happy to help you. We are in this together. We are all bound under this same covenant, and so we are not over and under each other. We are all learning about this together, about how we please God. Thank you for your attention this morning. If there's anything we can do to help you, then we would encourage you to come forward as together we stand and sing.